teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they love you.
Hello, welcome to a Six String Hayride podcast, a journey through the world of classic country music with your hosts, Chris Wainscott and Jim O'Malley. We will be covering all of the great topics in country music, from mama to prison, to dancing, to drinking, to guitar picking, to all the crazy deal with the devil, honky-tonking stuff you do on Saturday night, and how you try to get it past your Lord on Sunday morning. So climb aboard the cart, and let's go.
Not did you pass on what you have learned? Strength, mastery, but weakness, folly, failure also. Yes, failure most of all. The greatest teacher failure is. We are what they grow beyond. That is the true burden of all masters.
I came here looking for something I couldn't find anywhere else. Hey, I'm not trying to be nobody, I just want a chance to be myself. I've spent 1,000 miles of coming. Yes, I've worn blisters on my heel, trying to find me something better on the streets of Bakersfield.
Hello, and welcome back to the Six String Hayride Classic Country Podcast with Chris Wainscott and Jim O'Malley. We hope you all enjoyed our Christmas episode and had a nice time looking back at some old Christmas songs from childhood and some of the more current ones. Country, rock and roll, blues, etc. It's that time of year. So, yeah, we hope you had a good time checking out some Christmas songs with us. Thank you very much. We hope your Hanukkah and or Christmas was a real good time with friends and family and all the food was good. There are a lot of wintertime and Christmas stories that hit on the idea of being nestled in and tucked in and all that. So Chris and I are going to roll with that one for our end of the year episode, and we are going to tell you a hell of a good story. If you ever wondered how we got here to actually be country music fans, well, we're going to tell you. And here's the idea. We're looking forward to next year, to 2025, and we have a little bit of a homework assignment, friendly suggestion for everybody. Find a way to pay it forward. Your love of this music, whatever it is that really moves you and makes you happy to be a part of this musical community, that's the homework for the next year. Find a way to keep this music going and to pay it forward.
What do you want me to do, for you to see you through? Box of rain will ease the pain and love can see you through.
So to look forward with this idea in mind, we're going to take you all the way back to the mid-60s and the early 70s and tell you how we got here in the first place.
When I was a child, my family would travel down to western Kentucky where my parents were born. And there's a backwards old town that's often remembered so many times that my memories are worn. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay.
While we don't intend this to be any sort of year in review or next year in preview type episode, it does make sense when you get to the end of a year to reflect back on what was and to reflect on what's to come. So with that in mind, we do want to talk to you about how we became country music fans, the songs that got us into the music, where we went from there, where we'll go from here. And as Jim mentioned, we do want everybody to participate in a homework assignment for the year of 2025. And that homework assignment is just share the music with one person. If you can find more than one person, great, but one person is fine. If you can take somebody who's kind of expressed an interest in country music, or they say they don't like country, but then you keep noticing they say, yeah, but I like this song or that song.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around the bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps rolling on down to San Antonio.
Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been. Seeing things that I may never see again. And I can't wait to get on the road again.
Share your story with them. Take that person you know who says they don't like country music, but you notice they keep mentioning that they like certain songs, which are definitely country.
Say, hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me? Could find us a brand new recipe.
So country music, and especially classic country music that we talk about on this podcast, is particularly well suited to be shared almost in the old storytelling traditions, like we're the new bards and we're out there trying to spread this music further.
Let there be songs to fill the air.
So today we'll tell you our own stories about how we came to love this music and songs that inspired us to continue learning from there. Here to tell you how he got into country music and to share some songs with you, Jim O'Malley.
My parents were Depression-era kids from northern Wisconsin in the towns between Appleton and Wausau. And my dad wound up serving in the Navy during the last part of the Pacific War, the war with Japan. He was in the Navy on a troop transport ship. And from what I hear, this is where he gets exposed to a lot of different music, because you're on a boat isolated and you're with guys from all different parts of the U.S. And there is armed services radio. There's no, you know, iPods and MP3s and Spotify and stuff like that. But there's at least one record player on the ship. And you have at least a handful of guys with guitars. When you look at photographs and hear stories from service people from World War II and Korea and Vietnam, the idea that there's somebody around with a guitar or harmonica or somebody that knows a bunch of old folk songs, that's a recurring theme that you hear from veterans, you know, about their military service. And my dad was certainly one of those guys. The music that he embraced above everything else was Johnny Cash.
Well, he couldn't ride or wrangle, and he never cared to make a dime, but give him his guitar, and he'd be happy all the time.
I grew up listening to Live at Folsom Prison and Live at San Quentin. In the beginning, you know, it didn't matter if I wanted to or not. He was playing his records, and it was one of those big old RCA units. You know, it was a huge piece of furniture. And in the middle compartment, you have the turntable and the radio. And of course, you know, it's old RCA gear. So you got little Nipper Dog metal, you know, insignias all over the thing. And that's the center part. And the top kind of lifts out and becomes a shelf. And then on either side, there are speakers. And the one that my parents had in their house was built such that you could detach the speakers. And there was just maybe a few feet of wire, so you could move the speakers away from the cabinet and try to set them out and put yourself at that third point in the triangle and, you know, do the whole sweet spot thing. But yeah, you know, anybody that remembers those old RCA stereo units from the 60s, yeah, big as a truck. So, you know, when I was in kindergarten and people are going around singing the usual kindergarten song catalog here in Chicago, I was thinking about Wreck of the Old 97 and the Wabash Cannonball. They're great songs. So why are they great songs? Wreck of the Old 97 is based on an actual true story. It involves the Southern Railway mail train. It was known as the Fast Mail. Literally train number 97. And just like the song tells you, it goes from Monroe, Virginia to Spencer, North Carolina. And on September 27 of 1903, because they were behind schedule, the train is moving at an unsafe and excessive speed, and it goes off the side of a bridge. 11 people from the train crew are killed. 7 others are injured. And Wreck of the Old 97 becomes one of the more famous railroad songs in American music.
Well, they gave him his orders at Monroe, Virginia. Said, Steve, you're way behind time. This is not 38, this is Old 97. Put her in the Spencer on time.
The engineer is a 33-year-old guy named Joseph Andrew Brody. For some reason, people call him Steve. In the Johnny Cash rendition of the song, they refer to the guy as Steve. But his real name is Joseph Andrew Brody. And he's at the controls of the Southern Railway 1102, the 97 mail train. He is going way, way too fast. And they go over the side of a bridge.
And then a telegram comes from Washington Station. This is how it read. Oh, that brave engineer that run old 97 is lying in old Danville dead. 'Cause he was going down a grade, making 90 miles an hour. The whistle broke into a scream. He was found in the wreck with his hand on the throttle, scalded to death by the steam. One more time.
Clerk named Thompson and a mail clerk named Harris. And there's a guy who works for Express Messenger named Pickney, and they survive the crash and they all go home to Charlotte, North Carolina. Pickney, the Express Messenger guy, he resigns immediately after surviving the crash. The song about the wreck of the old 97 had already been around for quite some time before Johnny Cash does it in 1969 for the Live at San Quentin album. The original version of the song that gets out to the public is 1924. It's Victor record number 19427. It is recorded by Vernon Dalhart, and it becomes the first million-selling record in country music.
From the great Atlantic Ocean to the wide Pacific shore, she climbs the flowery mountains or the hills and by the shore. She's mighty tall and handsome, she's known quite well by all. She's a regular combination on the Wabash Cannonball.
The song itself, aside from being one of the legendary, you know, kind of early blueprint or foundation type songs in country music, because it's such a catchy and recognizable melody, it's a big marching band song at this point as well, which I think is just fantastic. So the song itself, there is no real specific origin writing credit. It does originate in the 1800s. One of the really early recordings of the song is going to be the Carter Family. It's released in 1932. This is the original Carter lineup, the grown-ups, not the kids. So we get Sarah and her husband, AP, and then we get Mother Maybelle. And Wabash Cannonball is one of the reasons that as a kid, I got really interested in maps and geography and like where things were. And when I think back and really try to sort that out, a lot of the songs that I've liked over the years are things that follow that original Wabash Cannonball formula. If you hear Nat King Cole or the Rolling Stones doing Route 66, the song is basically a map. We're here, we're going here, and then we're going there, and then, you know, we're going to wind up in California. The other one like that has always stayed with me and is another personal favorite is the Chuck Berry song, very often covered by the Grateful Dead and Bob Weir, but The Promised Land. Same thing. Guy gets in a bus in Norfolk, Virginia, and the bus breaks down. He meets some people. He gets an airplane ride. He gets some food, and he winds up in California.
She came down from Birmingham one cold December day. As she pulled into the station, you could hear all the people say, "She's from Tennessee, she's long and she's tall. She came down from Birmingham on the Wabash Cannonball. Listen to the jingle, the rumble and the roar, as she glides along the woodland or the hills and by the shore. Hear the mighty rush of the engine, hear those lonesome hobos call. Traveling through the jungle on the Wabash Cannonball."
Really big part of my early musical education. And, you know, I didn't grow up thinking, oh, well, these are the country songs and these are the rock and roll songs. Because at the same time, my dad was doing this. You know, where I grew up, there were a fair amount of like backyard sales, garage sales, church basement sales. And that's where I was slowly getting my hands on some Beatles records. And the very first one I had was Rubber Soul, which kind of about halfway through the career comes out towards the end of 1965. It is still one of my top three, you know, for the Beatles catalog. But I'm listening to Johnny Cash. I'm listening to the Beatles. I'm starting to hear a little bit of Carter Family and some other older folk music. You know, and again, when you're a kid, you're not thinking, oh, well, this is classic rock and this is folk and this is country and this is, you know, traditional. And the music business was not as profitable and intense as it is now. So I don't think it's, you know, me being clever to not look at labels. I think a lot of people just weren't, because it wasn't the same big chunk of capitalism that it is now. So I've got Johnny, I've got the Carter Family, I've got the Beatles, and now all of a sudden I'm seeing a lot of the old Gene Autry movies on the weekends. And, you know, he sings constantly in these movies. And that Gene Autry catalog, those are fantastic, fantastic songs. The one that really sticks in my mind and stayed with me all these years is Back in the Saddle.
I'm back in the saddle again, out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly Jimson wheat. Back in the saddle again.
You know, I think this is another example of just sheer repetition, because Back in the Saddle is very much Gene Autry's signature song. It remains one of the most popular cowboy songs in American music. The record is issued in September of 1939 on CBS Columbia, and it is written by Gene Autry and Ray Whitley. This is the single that comes right before South of the Border, Down Mexico Way. At the end of the 1930s, this is when Autry is really getting, you know, to that hot streak in his career. He's just peaking. And, you know, these songs are still alive and well now, 90 some years later. I think that kind of commands our attention and respect. It's incredibly good music.
I'm back in the saddle again, out where a friend is a friend.
Would sometimes just buy a whole bunch of 45s. And for those of you that don't know, a 45 is a single. It's a record with one song on the front side and one song on the back side and a big hole in the middle. And that was a way of life for music lovers through the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. It's really the Beatles and Bob Dylan that cement that format of a full-length album. Of course, do not overlook what Marty Robbins does in 1959 with the Outlaw songs, the Cowboy and Trail songs. And that album is kind of the first full proper story from front to back record. But one of the singles I latched onto at some garage sale somewhere on the north side of Chicago was that bright red label with the big black letters, Smash Records. The song is King of the Road, January 1965.
Trailer for sale or rent, rooms to let 50 cents,
No phone, no pool, no pets. Ain't got no cigarettes. Ah, but 2 hours of pushing broom buys a 8x12 four-bit room. I'm a man of means by no means, king of the road.
It's barely 2.5 minutes. It's written by Roger Miller, definitely his signature song. King of the Road, you know, in the 60s and 70s is one of those songs that it remains a classic country song with the Roger Miller version, but it sort of becomes a garage band classic. It's a really easy song. It's, you know, chord wise, it's C, F, and G. And the arrangement is simple enough that you can almost hear where the changes are. So you don't even really need to see, you know, the music written out. I mean, I can't read music anyway, aside from a chord chart. But, you know, this is one of those songs sort of like Gloria or Wild Thing or Twist and Shout, where if you're a teenager and you're hanging out with your friends in a basement or in a garage and you're trying to learn how to play guitar, King of the Road, you know, that song is waiting for you to come and get it.
Third boxcar, midnight train, destination Bangor, Maine. Ooh, worn out suit and shoes. I don't pay no union dues. I smoke old stogies I have found. Short but not too big around. I'm a man of means by no means, king of the road.
There is a wonderfully hilarious B-side on an REM record where, and in the notes, they just put it out there. It's like, look, we were working on the proper single all day. By the end of the day, we were drunk. It was really hot in the studio. So what the hell? We cut King of the Road and put it out as a B-side. Ragged but right. And that really kind of defines that. And, you know, again, like with Back in the Saddle or with Wreck of the Old 97, these are songs where the writing and the storytelling is really good and high quality, but it's also so damn accessible that you can remember the words and know the words and sing along. You know, it's not Woody Guthrie or John Prine where it's almost like memorizing, you know, Shakespeare or James Joyce. This is just plain, simple language and a really good story.
You and I travel to the beat of a different drum. Can't you tell by the way I run every time you make eyes at me? Ooh-wee, you cry and moan and say we'll work out, but honey child, I've got my doubts. You can't see the forest for the trees. Don't get me wrong. Goodbye, I'm leaving. I see no sense in you crying and grieving. Won't live a lot longer if you live without me, babe. Thank you very much.
Take a look to see what happens after the Monkees quit in 1969. You find out that the tall, skinny, quiet guy with the funny green hat and the enormous Gretsch 12-string guitar, Michael Nesmith. His mom is the lady that invented liquid paper. But Nesmith is a proper guitar player, proper songwriter, and, you know, not a bad singer. And
well, you and I
travel to the beat of a different drum. Can't you tell by the way I'm wrong? Every time you make eyes at me, yes, you cry and moan and say it'll work out. But honey child, I've got my doubts. You can't see the forest for the trees.
There were times, you know, during these Monkey episodes where there'd be some sort of slapstick comedy thing going on in the front of the scene, and very often in the back, sitting in the corner, would be Nesmith playing around on the big Gretsch. And there would be little snippets of songs that would turn up on his solo records in the 1970s. The guy was writing a ton of songs in the mid to late 60s, but because of the record and TV contract that the Monkees were under, he was getting one or two songs on a record. So I'm hearing different drum, you know, like I said, a little bit here and there in these Monkees TV episodes. Mike Nesmith doesn't put it on his own solo record until the early 70s, but something really incredible happens to the song during that time with other musicians. Linda Ronstadt is in a band called the Stone Ponies, and they put out a version of Different Drum in 1967. Not much happens with it, and certainly I'm, you know, barely 2 years old, so I'm not keeping track. But in 1974, she re-releases it, and now it's just under her own name. It's not the Stone Ponies anymore. At the same time that I'm hearing Different Drum, because I'm watching reruns of the Monkees, I'm hearing Different Drum on the radio constantly in 1974 because Linda Ronstadt is having this huge hit with it. And, you know, if you want to take a little kid and get them all confused about the idea of time travel and wibbly wobbly and string theory and all that stuff, and you can't go online and, you know, ask Stephen Hawking or Neil Tyson or whoever about it, you're just kind of stuck being confused. But what Ronstadt does with the record, you know, in 1974, hell of a singer. And certainly she had a lot more support from her record company for solo work than Nesmith did during the Monkee time. And it took me a while to kind of connect the dots and be like, oh, okay. So the guy from the Monkees wrote this song, and then, you know, 8-9 years later, Linda Ronstadt does so well with it that, you know, it was, yeah, at this point in the 70s, just constantly on the radio. It's one of her really, you know, huge breaks. It, from 1974 on, the idea of hearing Linda Ronstadt on the radio a lot, it's a pretty common thing through the rest of the 70s.
Yes, and I ain't saying you ain't pretty. Oh, I'm saying I'm not ready for any person, place, or thing to try and pull the reins in on me. So goodbye. I believe and I see no sense in this crying and grieving. We'll both live a lot longer.
Chris is the one who's always coming up with these really weird rabbit holes where at first you think, how do I get from there to there? And then ultimately it just makes so much sense that you think, why didn't I realize that sooner? That's probably the best way I can describe Different Drum. I really wound up getting into Linda Ronstadt as a singer, and, you know, as a lot of the stuff on the radio in the mid-70s is crap, which is why you don't really hear it anymore. Linda Ronstadt, as a vocalist and as a person who knows what songwriters to pursue to get material, that's a unique level of quality right there. It really is, you know, and she remains one of the finest singers from this era, from the mid 70s on. You know, there's her and Emmy Lou, and then the trio records that they do with Dolly Parton later on. And this song that comes by way of a, you know, discarded song from the time of the Monkees TV show, it really becomes one of Ronstadt's signature songs. And it's a great track.
Well, I feel pretty sure that you'll find a man who will take a lot more than I ever could or can, and you'll settle down with him, and I know that you'll be happy. So goodbye, I'm leaving. I see no sense in you crying and grieving. We'll both live a lot longer if you live without me, babe. I'll go with.
It's been a fun ride for me, and I feel very lucky to have been exposed to this music in the way that I was and at the time that I was. I want to be a music lover. I want to be a person with, you know, so many records in my house that there isn't room for anything else except, well, a little bit of food and the cat.
Skies smiling at me, nothing but blue skies do I see.
Starting in the early 70s in beautiful West Texas, Chris Wainscott.
Thanks, Jim. For me, my journey with country music really more or less begins at birth. My mom, to describe her as my dad actually did to me once, was a shit kicker.
Some people like to rock, some people like to roll, but moving in a groove is gonna satisfy my soul. Let's have a party. Hey, let's have a party. Throw a city to the store, let's buy some more, let's have a party tonight.
So, you know, country music was just a big part of her scene. And of course, you can imagine being in West Texas, it was just a big part of music in general. So, you know, for me, there wasn't necessarily like a big bang moment. It just always sort of was. You know, it's one of those in the beginning sort of stories. So what I want to do is I want to talk to you about a few songs that cemented my love for country music, and what it is about the songs that drew me to them and where they took me on my journey after that.
Well, it's been rough and rocky traveling, but I'm finally standing upright on the ground. And after taking several readings, I'm surprised to find my mind still fairly sound. I thought Nashville was the roughest, but I know I've said the same about them all. We received our education in the cities of the nation, me and Paul.
So the first song I want to talk to you about is Me and Paul by Willie Nelson. The song is released initially on Yesterday's Wine in 1971. The song actually tells the tale of Willie's friendship with Paul English, who was many things to Willie, among them the drummer in his band, but he was also the road manager. And we're talking about somebody who had to deal with some very unsavory characters, you know, shady promoters and guys that would try and rip the band off. So, you know, Paul's often carrying a pistol, dealing with business in the middle of the show. He's also partly Willie's business empire manager. He's one of Willie's favorite chess partners, and he's his lifelong best friend.
And at the airport in Milwaukee, they refused to let us board the plane at all. They said we looked suspicious, but I believe they like to pick on me and Paul. And on a package show in Buffalo, with us and Kitty Wells and Charlie Pride. The show was long and we was just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride. And we drank a lot of whiskey, so I don't know if we went on that night at all.
You know, the meaning is so deeply personal. It's essentially three verses about events that define the early part of a friendship between two guys who, you know, they remain friends for decades and decades after the song is released. Of course, you can imagine what happens in Milwaukee when they get to the line at the airport in Milwaukee. They refuse to let us board the plane at all.
And at the airport in Milwaukee, they refuse to let us board the plane at all. They said we look suspicious, but I believe they like to pick on me and Paul.
July 1st, 2003, recorded by Jim from the Willie Nelson Show here in Milwaukee. I see you making those faces, but you do have that show and that song's on it. Now, I don't remember exactly what age I was, but it was definitely before we moved away from Midland, Texas, and that was when I was 11. So somewhere between 11 and maybe 7 or 8, I actually, for a Christmas or a birthday gift, my mom gave me a copy of Yesterday's Wine. So, you know, that's an album that I listened to over and over and over again as a kid.
The show was long and we just sitting there. And we come to play and not just for a ride. And we drank a lot of whiskey, so I don't know if we went on that night at all. I think they even missed it. I guess Buffalo ain't here for me at all.
So to me, there's just a lot of ingrained relationship with this record. You know, I listened to this song over and over again as a kid, and the story is a compelling one. It's kind of like the buddy film of songs. So the second song that I want to talk about today is If You've Got the Money, which was written and initially recorded by Lefty Frizzell. His version was released on September 14th of 1950.
If you got the money, I've got the time. We'll go honky-tonkin' and we'll have a time. We'll make all the night spots, dance, drink beer and wine. If you got the money, honey, I've got the time.
This is actually from Lefty's first Columbia recording session, and the song did spend 3 weeks at number one. Now, even though the song is a Lefty Frizzell song, that's not how I came to know of the song. Like yet another song on this list, it's actually something that I learned of from being a fan of Willie. There wasn't a ton of Lefty in my childhood. It's not that I necessarily didn't listen to any Lefty Frizzell, but for sure as a kid, I couldn't have named, you know, three Lefty Frizzell songs if my life would have depended on it. So it's a song that I'm sure I probably thought it was a Willie original for the longest time, but I will say, especially since starting the podcast, I have gone back and really done a deep dive on Lefty's music. And for those of you who got there several decades before me, boy, do I envy you, because you get to enjoy that for a lot longer than I ever will. But man, as for the song itself, you know, it's In so many ways, it's just kind of a typical Good Time Charlie song.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1. If you've got the money, honey, I've got the time. We'll go honky-tonkin' and we'll have a time. We'll have more fun, baby, all the way down the line. If you've got the money, honey, I've got the time.
So that'll bring me to the third song I want to talk about today, and that's Move It On Over.
Came in last night at 10:30. That baby of mine wouldn't let me in, so move it on over.
Move it on over.
Move it on over.
Move it on over.
Move over, little dog, 'cause the big dog's moving in.
It's written and recorded by Hank Williams. That takes place on April 21st, 1947 at Castle Studio in Nashville. So for anyone who's wondering where records used to get made in Nashville prior to Music Row, Castle Studio is it's a name you're going to see a lot.
Not to play around, but I done let the deal go down, so pack it on over.
Move it on over.
Tote it on over.
Move it on over.
Move over, nice dog, 'cause a mad dog's moving in.
This was actually Hank's first session for MGM. So the backing band is actually assembled by Fred Rose. You may remember Fred, writer of Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain. He is the Rose half of Acuff Rose, the music publishers, who were striving to treat artists fairly since it was run by artists themselves. He came up with the idea to use Red Foley's band as the backing band. So the song itself tells us the story of a man whose wife is sick of his wild ways. And essentially she tells him, don't come home if you're going to keep behaving like this. Of course, he does what so many men do. He tempts fate, and he comes home to find out that she was not, in fact, bluffing. The locks have been changed, and it looks like he's going to be spending the night outside in the actual doghouse with the dog. So now we're going to take a little bit of a side trip in our journey. And the reason for that is that the first three songs I spoke about, they're all songs that I came to know because of my love of Willie. But the truth is, I didn't decide on my own that I liked Willie Nelson. Obviously, the music moved me enough that I became a fan, but I listened to Willie Nelson because my mom listened to Willie Nelson. So all three of those first songs, you know, Me and Paul, If You've Got the Money, Move It On Over, they can all be attributed to something that was not my own free will and choice. The same cannot be said of the fourth song on my list, which is Walls of Time by Bill Monroe. This one was actually written by Monroe along with Peter Rowan. It's first recorded by Bill and James Monroe. That takes place on March 21st, 1972. And it's released almost a year later on March 1st of 1973.
I know it's my CR to call.
So while I might have, you know, really latched onto the song after hearing Peter Rowan tell the story of composing it, one of the reasons it stuck around is the modern day jam band String Cheese Incident. They actually cover this song from time to time. Now, there's a lot of interesting ways in which a song can find its way into your orbit. The more common ones are a friend says, hey, listen to this, or, you know, it's the new hit song that they're playing every half hour on the radio, or you're at a bar with a jukebox and you keep hearing this song over and over again because it's the hot new thing. A less likely way for a song to come into somebody's orbit is the way that this one really came into mind. And that is a commercial for one of those Time Life things where you could get a bunch of songs on like vinyl or cassette. I don't remember if it was just Old Timey Country or Hank Williams or what the Time Life collection was, but you know, they had a little clip of him playing the song and I thought, wow, this is really cool. Like, I really like this song. It's so catchy. And I have to say, I think this has got to be the only song I can think of where I first became aware of its existence because there was a commercial for it.
Say hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me? You think maybe we could find us a brand new recipe?
It's his own band, the Drifting Cowboys, backing him here, but it's either Owen Bradley or Fred Rose on piano.
I got a hot rod Ford and a $2 bill, and I know a spot right over the hill. There's soda pop and the dancing spree, so if you want to have fun, come along with me. Say, hey, good looking, what you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
Also, a side note for my former roommates in Arizona, Rob and Scott. I'd like to point out that one line of this song says, no more looking. I know I've been tookin'. So y'all can just suck it. I told you, tookin' is a word.
Time for me. No more looking. I know I've been cooking. How's about keeping steady company?
I would definitely credit Chris's experience as a big Willie Nelson fan from early on with me kind of going from being a Willie's really cool, great songwriter. He wrote all those, you know, cool tunes for Patsy Cline and for other people. And just full-blown, you know, Willie Nelson for president kind of point of view at this point. The guy's a genius. Songwriter, guitar player. I mean, is it flamenco? Yeah. Is it jazz? Yeah. Is it country? Yeah. You know, Willie is many things to many people. And it's been over the years that Chris and I have been listening to music together, and he's been, you know, an absolute terrible influence on me, that I've come to realize that he's really right about Willie Nelson. And
good morning, America. How are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. City of New Orleans, and I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
I really want to reiterate something that Jim said earlier. Let's make this coming year about paying it forward.
Just a box of rain, wind and water. Believe it if you need it. If you don't, just pass it on.
Try to be more welcoming and try to understand that we were all once new to this music as well, that will do a lot more good in a journey to keep it going, to keep it growing, to spread the music around the world, to not let it die because the fans are going to all age out. So with that in mind, folks, please, 2025, find one person who you know is curious about country music or might be open to learning about it and have a conversation. All right, folks, here to tell you about Santa's magical Irish concoction, the Ginger Dew, is Ginger Jim O'Malley. And I got to tell you, folks, a lot of people might think ginger is an insult, but when you're 58 and your hair's still visibly red, even on a Zoom camera, that's some shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, after busting one's tail to get through Christmas and Hanukkah and all that, Santa deserves a rewarding and dignified beverage to end the year. And that takes us to something simple, tasty, dignified, and certainly effective, the Ginger Dew. We highly recommend that you use Irish whiskey Tullamore Dew for this. If you have to use Jameson's, fine. If you want to go up a level to the Sexton or the Redbreast or something like that, way better. But this is pretty easy. I am not a fancy cocktail guy. Chris is the one with the pineapples and the umbrellas. Here's what you're going to need. You're going to need a bottle of Tullamore Dew Irish whiskey or reasonable non-Jameson's equivalent. You will need a glass. You will need a few ice cubes. You will need some non-alcoholic ginger beer. Don't use ginger ale. It's too sweet, a little on the ick side. So get some non-alcoholic ginger beer, and you will need a wedge of lime. Pretty simple. You put the ice in the glass. You cut the wedge of lime. You throw that in. You put in as much whiskey as you can handle and still operate your arms and legs around the house. Don't do this in a vehicle. And then you put in some non-alcoholic ginger beer to fill up the rest of the glass. You look around the room and give your respects to whoever happens to be there with you. And then you enjoy the drink. So we are very pleased that all of you have survived the last year, and we thank you for spending the time with us. 2025, live long and prosper. So please check us out on Facebook, Six String Hayride, Classic Country and Beyond. And please do look for us on Patreon. If you do not, you might be visited by several ghosts over the course of the evening. We're not responsible for that. We did warn you. So thank you very much, and have a happy and peaceful winter. Thank you.
We're on a mission from God.
For some people, small, beautiful events is what life is all about.
Hello, country.
I'd like to remind you to email us at sixstringhayride@yahoo.com. Six is spelled out. You can also search us on Facebook as Six String Hayride. Or what we'd really appreciate you doing is finding us on Patreon under Six String Hayride as well.
Well, folks, thanks again for joining your hosts, Chris Wainscott and Jim O'Malley, on the Six String Hayride Classic Country Podcast. We are here for all of your classic country, rockabilly, early rock and roll, little gospel, little blues, a lot of excellent country music themed recipes. And basically, we are here to keep your musical circle rocking, bopping, and very much unbroken. So thank you for sticking with us. We will see you down the road real soon. And again, whether it's in your home, in your community, wherever it is you do your thing, keep your circle unbroken. Stay well, stay safe, and we'll see you real soon.
Oh, can the circle be unbroken by and by, Lord, by and by? There's a bitter home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky.
One of these days, and it won't be long, I'll rejoin them in a song. I'm gonna join the family circle at the throne. No, the circle won't be broken by and by, Lord, by and by.
Remember, the Force will be with you always.